For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny has been detained as anti-corruption rallies take place across the country. The protests coincide with official events being held to mark Russia Day, which celebrates 1990's declaration of sovereignty. The UK's state opening of Parliament, otherwise known as the Queen's Speech, is to be delayed after the country's Conservative government failed to get a majority in last week's general election. The event, in which the government outlines its plans for its five-year term, had been scheduled for June the 19th. Our UK correspondent Natalie Powell reports.
It's suspected that this delay could mean Theresa May's government is rewriting some of its manifesto pledges after failing to reach an overall majority in the recent election. Her Conservative Party is also in the process of negotiating with Northern Ireland's Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, for support in her minority government, without which Theresa May's government will fail to have majority support in Parliament. It's likely one of the key areas being reviewed is the government's approach to Brexit, with backbenchers voicing concerns on this following the embarrassing snap election results. Natalie Powell, London.
French President Emmanuel Macron is set for another major win, with his party on course to take the most seats in the first round of parliamentary elections. The centrist La République En Marche party was only established just over a year ago. Many of its candidates have never held office before. Our Europe correspondent Jack Parrock reports.
The En Marche party is expected to take between 415 and 445 seats in the French parliament of 577 seats. Voters will have to head to the polls again next Sunday for the second round, however, where the top two candidates in each district will take part in a runoff. Turnout in the first round has been down at 48%. Many analysts believe voters for the traditional parties have resigned themselves to President Macron's popularity and not bothered to head out to the ballot. But the traditional socialist and Republican parties have encouraged people to make sure they get out for the second round to prevent Macron from monopolising power. Jack Parrock, Brussels.
Pope Francis has told a group of Nigerian priests to pledge obedience to him or face suspension from the church. Some clergy in the Diocese of Ahiara have been refusing to accept the appointment of a bishop dating back to 2012. A former rebel commander wanted by Serbia for alleged war crimes has won Kosovo's parliamentary election, according to preliminary results. Ramush Haradinaj is a former prime minister who leads a centre-right coalition. For lots more from us from around the world, you can like us at Facebook, facebook.com/featurestorynews. And for breaking news updates, follow us on Twitter, @featurestory. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett, and a warm welcome to the programme to you. It is Monday, June 12th, 2017. You wouldn't know it was June. You wouldn't know you're in the summer. Weather isn't great. Great to be with you. Hope you had a good weekend. Sorry I missed you yesterday. We'll tell you more about that in a second. This is Monday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, around about half past the hour, I'm going to open the Skype and the phone line. And for the rest of the program, I'm looking forward to getting your take on what happened in the last, in last week's UK general election. The way to contact me is to Skype me. The Skype handle for the programme is Chat with Richie. You can call, if you're inside the UK, 0161 408 2017 or 0161 408 2017. If you're outside the UK, it's plus 44 161 408 2017. But you're better to Skype because it doesn't cost you. It doesn't cost you a damn thing. Skype is Chat with Richie from about half past the hour. And if you missed that, because I happen to speak, I've got a propensity for speaking very quickly. The meme with the number and the Skype handle is on our Facebook page, go to facebook.com/The Richie Allen Show. I've also tweeted it as well. How are you? Well, I was absolutely cheesed off yesterday. Got up at 6 a.m. as I normally do on Sunday. Couldn't wait to talk to you about the coverage of the result of the UK general election, because I've noticed quite a few things in the coverage of it and claims being made by political commentators. Couldn't wait to chat with you. Two things happened. One, there was internet connectivity problems. In fact, I only got back online properly a little earlier. I only had my phone, meaning I couldn't upload anything, and I couldn't even record a programme because I couldn't download the audio that I wanted to do for Sunday View. So that was a nuisance. I was really cheesed off because I couldn't wait to do Sunday View yesterday. And then later on, around about mid-morning anyway, a minor problem came my way that I had to deal with, which probably would have put the kibosh on the programme anyway. But anyway, connectivity is restored and all is good. And as usual, thanks for joining the programme. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That's the best way to leave a comment for the programme, at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. And you can email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Remember, Skype is Chat with Richie, and the phone number is 0161 408 2017. If you want to speak to me in the second half hour of, in the final half hour of this hour, and into the second hour as well, whatever you think about the election, if you're happy about the outcome of it, if you were depending on some sort of change, if you have problems, if there have been financial difficulties in your life, of course, I want to hear from you. And if you've known me a while now, you'll know that whatever your opinion on the election is, you'll get a chance to express it. I certainly won't be cutting you off or arguing with you about it, whether I agree with it or not. How about that? We're broadcasting live on davidicke.com. Bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. We're also on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester at fabradiointernational.com, and Tune In Radio as well. It is Monday. I'm looking forward to the week. Good stuff. Right. Well, what was I going to tell you then? What was I going to tell you yesterday? Well, I've been thinking about the result of the election over the weekend. I listened very carefully to David on Friday, and you listened carefully to what he had to say as well. He made some very, very good and very interesting points about what might come out of this, what we should look at, and who might benefit from it. And he talked at length, and I thought he spoke very well about the opportunity, if Jeremy Corbyn is the real deal, the opportunity he would have now with a mandate, not a mandate from the public, but a mandate from within his own party, having picked up extra seats, although he didn't win the election or anywhere near it, having had a better result than that of Ed Miliband, seeing as he was going to be destroyed, he has an opportunity now to say things that he otherwise heretofore hasn't said. That was a point well made by David. Now, I've been thinking about this over the weekend. I've been thinking about how the election came to be called, when it was called, and what was going on at that time. And I've got one or two thoughts for you. And you might take me up on one or two of these thoughts when I open Skype and open the phone in around about 25 minutes' time. So this is my take on it now. And it's just my take, it's just my opinion, based on, I've spent a lot of time over the weekend looking at it, and I've come to this conclusion about the election, how it was called, why it was called, and what happened. Okay. Again, the Skype handle is Chat with Richie, and it's +44 161 408 2017. Now, today, the Conservatives are still negotiating with Ulster's Democratic Unionist Party. From now on, we'll call them the DUP. Now, it wouldn't be a coalition. David and I explained this to you on Friday. In case you're unfamiliar with elections and the aftermath of elections, doesn't make you stupid. You might not care, or you might not know. It won't be a coalition. It will be a confidence and supply agreement, meaning that the DUP would back the minority Conservative Party government when they needed it, when they needed backing on their budget to get their budget passed, and any security plans as well. So it wouldn't be a coalition like we saw the Lib Dems and the Conservatives in 2010. Minority government is being proposed, and that's basically it. They're still talking, and the Queen's speech has been delayed. It was due to be next week. It's going to be a bit later because of these ongoing negotiations and all of that. Although some newspapers are reporting that it's one of the reasons it's being or has been delayed is because the parchment on which the Queen's speech is written to preserve it in record for all time is goatskin. Vellum, is that right? Not going to get into that. Anyway, the Queen's speech has been or has been or will be delayed. Now, today, the media here in the UK, their political commentators have been saying two things, and I think two things only, all day Sunday, all day today. The two things they are saying is, one, that Theresa May is unlikely to see out the year as UK Prime Minister. So pretty much everybody is unanimously agreed on May won't be around later on in the year, and that might throw negotiations with the European Union up in the air. Might be a big problem. Everybody's agreed on that. And the second thing is that last week's election result is a clear rejection of hard Brexit by the British people. That's what the political commentators are saying today. Last week's election result is a clear rejection of hard Brexit by the UK people, the UK populace. So that's what I wanted to chat about before the old phone lines are opened up to you. I wanted to chat about the idea that the result handed to the political parties by the public on Thursday was a loud and very clear rejection of hard Brexit, the hard Brexit that Theresa May's government was pursuing. Now, I know many of our listeners in the UK are like me and they spend quite a bit of time watching broadcast media. You know, we've talked about this at length. It's on in your house 18 hours a day, non-stop. Remember all that nonsense I talked about? It's replaced the daytime soaps and it's actually replaced the radio. It's on all the time, 18 hours a day. So today, it's been accepted. Now, there's been no debate on this. It has been decreed by the media and by their commentators that the public rejected hard Brexit at the polls, at the ballot box last Thursday. That's it, right? And because of that, a lot of commentators are saying today that the government will have to change its position. You might have heard this in the news at the top of the hour. Ollie Barrett said it, that the government will have to change its position towards the UK leaving the EU, and that we, the UK, might pursue some sort of an associate membership of the Union. In other words, kind of half in and half out. And another way of putting that is a Brexit which might seem like we're actually leaving the European Union when in fact we're not, right? Remember David Icke saying this last year when the referendum result was announced? Remember? After it was announced that 52% of the people said we have to leave or we should leave. Remember, David warned about this sort of thing. I talked at length about it on the programme too as well. So, before the announcement of the election, this is important. The election was announced about 7 or 8 weeks ago. There was a very interesting phenomenon. There was a very interesting, I don't know, reality, let's call it. And that was, and I talked, probably I bored you to death on several Sunday views commenting on this, because before the election was called, the UK broadcast media was running interviews all the time, weren't they? With people like the Lib Dems and the Greens and Tony Blair and other lefty political commentators, all of them saying that the British people hadn't voted for a hard Brexit. So this is going on, this before the election was called now, okay? All the time we had this constant barrage of propaganda. The people didn't vote for hard Brexit. It never stopped, it never ended. And I spent a lot of time recording it and playing some of the sound bites for you on programmes like Sunday View. Alrighty. Now, we remember Gina Miller, the hairdresser, is she? She's a bit more than that, is she? No, it was Gina Miller and a hairdresser. Gina works in finance with her husband, doesn't she? The hedge fund guy. Now, they successfully petitioned to the High Court to insist that Theresa May had to get parliamentary approval to trigger Article 50. They won. May did get parliamentary approval. In fact, she got a pretty unanimous total backing from Parliament to trigger the old Article 50 there. Now, all the while this was going on, all the individual Sunday morning talk shows and the weekday mid-morning talk shows featured Remainers saying, we were duped, the British people didn't want this, the government is threatening Brussels, the government is reckless, they're being confrontational, and so on. But I think on this programme, we were able to prove very effectively that the threats were in fact coming from Europe, from Michel Barnier, chief negotiator, Juncker, Merkel, Verhofstadt, all the usual gang. They were the ones making threats saying, if you're out, you've got to suffer one way or the other. You've got to suffer because you can't just leave and, you know, have a great time and all of that. They were making the threats, and May, now I've no time for Theresa May at all, but let's be honest about it. May was keeping her powder dry, and May was saying things like, I tell you what, we'll do the best to get a deal for them and for us, but that might mean no deal. Okay? But we'll be leaving the customs union and the single market, whatever, and we'll then enact the Great Repeal Bill. That is what May was saying. If the deal is no good and we're getting nowhere, we'll leave without it, and we'll trade on World Trade Organization terms, which is actually quite good, but the media tell you repeated lies and say it isn't. May said, we'll be out of the union, out of the single market, and we'll enact a Great Repeal Bill. Do you want me to remind you? The Great Repeal Bill would repeal the 1972 European Communities Act, and that was the act which took Britain into the European Union. And it meant that European law took precedence over laws passed by the British Parliament. It was an outrage then, and it's an outrage now. The Great Repeal will also end the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. And to quote you, all existing EU legislation would be copied across into domestic UK law just to make a transition nice and smooth on the day after Brexit. The government said, we don't want the black hole in our statute book, and to avoid any disruption, we will incorporate these laws. Happy days. But ultimately, there will be a repeal, and no longer will European law take precedence over laws passed by British Parliament. All very good. Who would argue with that? Well, Jeremy Corbyn is, and I'll come back to that a bit later on. So I've been doing my homework, as you would expect. I know some of you think I have an easy life. You have an easy old life there, Richie, coming on the radio at 7 o'clock. I have a good life. It's not an easy life. I've been doing my homework all weekend long, and I've been looking at everything to do with opinion polling and gauging public reaction to all of that, to Gina Miller, to Article 50, and to all of that. Now, during the period of February, March and April, Theresa May's personal approval figures were very, very high. Any summary search on any internet search engine, you'll find she was quite liked. She was very much liked by the Conservative base. She was liked by people who didn't have an affiliation to any party. She was seen as somebody pretty serious, somebody pretty dependable. Of course, people on necessary benefits, the worst off in society, they had other opinions of Theresa May. I would agree with those. But by and large, her approval figures, whether we like it or not, were very, very good. Now, at the same time, YouGov, Servation and others, a lot of others, were running polls on how the public felt about Theresa May's hard Brexit stance. Now, this is very important. Very important. There were a number of polls conducted asking the public, what do you think about hard Brexit, leaving the customs union, leaving the single market? What do you think about the repeal bill? And ultimately, what do you think about not taking any deal? In other words, no deal is better than a bad deal. So what was the result of those polls then? And I haven't been selective, by the way. Some polls said that the public didn't like May, but there were many polls done. And a poll of polls, I'm going to be honest here, some polls found that people weren't too thrilled about May taking a confrontational stance, and they didn't like the term hard Brexit and all of that. some polls. But in the main, the polls overwhelmingly taken as a mean number, the mean of the polls, the average of the polls, was saying that May had the backing of an average of 56% of those surveyed each time. Now remember, the result of the referendum last year was 52% voted leave, 48% voted to remain. This spring, polls were showing that 56% of those surveyed liked the approach May was taking towards Brexit, the hard Brexit thing. Now, there was a massive YouGov poll at the end of March, only a few weeks ago, let's say 8 weeks ago. A massive poll. And it found two things. It found 69% of the public wanted Brexit to go ahead as soon as possible. And it also said that 48% of the public, this was a huge poll now, serving thousands and thousands of people, 48% of the public agreed with no deal was better than a bad deal, with only 17% disagreeing. I'll repeat that. 29th of March, May said no deal was better than a bad deal. 48% of the public agreed with that. Only 17% said they didn't. And 55% said the UK should be prepared to walk away without a deal, compared to 24% who said we should do a deal whatever, as long as we get some sort of deal. This was great for Theresa May. She had the, not unanimous, but she had the vast majority of the men and women of this country behind her in how she was approaching, or how it was perceived that she was going to approach the negotiations with the European Union. And her polling, her personal numbers, were very, very good. Now, if you're just tuning into this, this is not a Theresa May loving. I have no time for Theresa May or anybody like her. But this is all true. Now, at the same time, Jeremy Corbyn's personal approval ratings were abysmal. They were abysmal. So the public, despite the conduct of the media and their constant propaganda about people didn't vote for a hard Brexit, the public were happy for May to go and do a deal, to get out of the single market and to get out of the customs union. So I think what I've just outlined there, and I was so desperate to do Sunday View yesterday, because I was going to spend a whole programme on it yesterday. I think what I've just outlined was a doomsday scenario for the hidden hand, for the elite, for the Zionist-controlled central bankers, who are obviously, and this is entry-level stuff, but they are pursuing centralisation of power through political unions. This was doomsday. This was disaster for them. The public are happy with May. The public are happy with the way she's going about going after, well, the perceived way she was going about leaving the union. Everything was on the up and up, despite the propaganda, day in, day out, the lies about how we were stupid. We didn't know that a deal, we didn't know that voting leave meant leaving the single market. We were thick, apparently. None of that worked. Everything was on the up and up, so the elite had to act. Why was the referendum called in the first place? I've always believed, and I used to speak to Nigel Farage on the radio in Spain in 2009, 2010 and 2011. I used to speak to him every 6 or 7 weeks. I began speaking to him when he wasn't very well known. And I saw the rise of Farage. And again, I have no time for him personally or any political party. I have no interest in any political party. When I say I have no time for him, I don't mind him. He makes me laugh. Farage is a genuine anti-EU campaigner. Genuine. Regardless of what you might think about him and some of the people associated with UKIP. Him. Very magnetic, very dynamic man who absolutely believed the EU was anti-democratic and tyrannical. And campaigned on it and campaigned on it. And because of his personality, because of his understanding of, his excellent understanding of how to deal with the media. Wonderful media guy. I used to love interviewing him and arguing with him. The elite thought, or a decision was made to have the referendum Anyway, because of the noise made by Farage and then because of a growing campaign behind UKIP, because I think the elite told Cameron, trigger the referendum, son, because they thought they'd win. I think they thought they'd win and the matter would be put to bed forever. The UK votes to stay in the European Union. That's the end of that. Farage disappears up his own arse. We never hear of UKIP ever again. One time only deal, bingo. But it didn't work. Despite the bizarre circumstances around the death of Joe Cox, despite everything else, it didn't work. And the people said, no, enough's enough, and they voted to leave. So they screwed up royally. They're not perfect. And I think, no matter what TV and the newspapers threw at the public, no matter what propaganda they chucked at the public, to convince the public they were stupid and they made a mistake, it didn't matter. All the Gina Millers, all the Tim Farrens, the Tony Blairs, all of that had no impact on people whatsoever. As I've demonstrated, the public, I think, were and are, I believe, right now in favour of coming out in totality. They are absolutely in favour. The majority of people in this country are in favour of leaving the EU completely. So something had to be done about it. Something had to be done about that. So I think the shadowy string masters got together and said, you know what, we need an election and we need one now. But here's something for you, they said to themselves. It can't be fought on the European Union because May will win in a landslide. It has to be fought over social justice. It has to be fought over social care benefits and the National Health Service. It must be. It can't be fought on the European Union. Now remember, prior to the election being called by May, she said seven different times there was no way, there wasn't a cat's chance there was going to be an election. Keep that in mind. I'll come back to that in a minute. So when the election was called, we were told, weren't we, you and I, that this was going to be a second referendum on the European Union. It was ultimately a second referendum on the EU. That's what we were told. But you see, the shadowy stringmasters are not stupid. That's what we were told. May was told to call an election she didn't want, and she was told to use the excuse that she wanted a clear mandate to go and do the deal with the European Union. Remember this. This is central to my argument, whether you believe me or not, and feel free to come on the programme in a minute and tell me I'm wrong. You'll get plenty of time to do so. May was told to use that excuse. I want a mandate to go and deal with the EU. I'm getting static from the other parties. But this made no sense, because the Parliament had given her the mandate to go ahead and trigger Article 50. The public supported Brexit on her terms, and she had 3 years to go and do a deal with the European Union. Now, she didn't have 3 years. She had 2 years, but she had 3 years left in her term as Prime Minister before a 2020 election. So there was panic, and this couldn't be allowed to happen. So I surmise, and again, feel free to shoot it down, May was handed the dodgy manifesto. She was handed the dodgy manifesto, which I've said on this programme. And again, when I say I've said, there's no arrogance implied there. I don't know everything. When I say I said, I just want to remind you that when I saw that manifesto, I laughed out loud. It was the most ridiculous, the most dodgy, the most incredulous manifesto ever handed to the public by a party. That basically, in a few pages, told the middle income and middle-aged and senior citizens that we are going to fuck you so hard you're going to feel like it's an elephant in your retirement. We're going to take your life's earnings. We're going to take your house equity, most of it to pay for your social care, which you've already paid for through your taxation anyway. We're scrapping fuel allowance and we're removing the triple lock pension guarantee. You know what I was thinking when I saw that manifesto and David mentioned on Friday? I was speaking to David the day the manifesto came out. I was on the phone to him. David said, Richie Garrett was on the phone to me, Garrett, David's son, and he said he can't believe this manifesto. It's like somebody's trying to throw the election. Now, Garrett was right. And I concluded the same thing he did. We're going to screw you in your retirement, take your life's earnings, your house equity, most of it. you're going to have to pay for your own care, even though you've paid for it 10 times over. You know what I was thinking? Theresa May must have wet her panties when she saw the manifesto. Literally. Because she couldn't believe her eyes. Go back to the Michael Foot manifesto. It was a suicide note. Because in one fell swoop, dear listener, didn't May and the Conservative Party ensure that hundreds of thousands of voters would walk away from her, having seen her as a very capable and credible politician the day before? Because middle income and senior citizen pensioned voters are a far greater in terms of numbers demographic than younger people, and people are selfish. They don't give a shit about people on benefits. They couldn't care less. So the day before, these people thought Theresa May, well, they thought that she was the cat's pajamas, right? One day later, she's a word that sounds like the word ending ending in runt. That's what they thought. So what did she do? She basically gave Jeremy Corbyn mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Then she used a defibrillator on him 20 or 30 times. She nursed him back to health. She opened the door, kicked him in the arse and sent him on his way with a lollipop. Jeremy, welcome back. Madness. She dragged him back into the ring, I think, when he was being stretchered off to the dressing room, never to be seen again. Why? Think about it. Why? Now, those senior citizens that May had enraged, and I bet some of these senior citizens had voodoo dolls of Theresa May, made out of wool and twine, and they were spending all sorts of... they were having parties, sticking pins in them. These senior citizens happened to be the same people whose demographic voted in their droves for what? For leaving the European Union. Not just senior citizens, people in middle age. Senior citizens, middle-aged people, retirees were, as a voting group, very much in favour of getting out of the European Union. Coincidence? You with me? Now, maybe you don't agree with any of this. Maybe you're a Jeremy Corbyn supporter and you don't like hearing it. That's okay. You'll get your chance in a few minutes. But I've got you thinking, right? I've got you thinking. All of a sudden, there's life in Jeremy. Lazarus, the election is not about the EU. It is really. But on the surface now, it isn't. It is about the EU. Those who called it, and Theresa May didn't call it, it's all about the EU for those who call it. But in reality, it is. But now, it isn't. Do you understand? It's all about the EU. But now to the public, it's all about social care. Jeremy helps. What does Jeremy do? Well, he says, let's abolish tuition fees. By doing that, he mobilised somewhere between 1.5 million and 2 million 18 to 25-year-olds to register. Fantastic. So you have this on the one hand, and on the other hand, the old folks are pissed right off. It's like an episode of Seconds from Disaster on the Discovery Channel. You can see how these things come together to cause the disaster, right? Now, not a disaster for me, but for those in the Conservative Party. Now, despite all of this, May still wins most seats. She does. Let's not forget that. She isn't too far away from a majority. Not too far, despite the disastrous campaign that she ran. But it's immediately spun by people who had previously spent miles of column inches mocking Jeremy Corbyn. People who had mocked and laughed at Corbyn and written columns and columns and columns. All of a sudden, they're spinning it as a win for Labour, which it wasn't, or anything like it. Get that idea out of your head. And then it was spun as a rejection of hard Brexit, which it definitely wasn't. The election turned on the issues of social care, benefits, tuition fees, nationalisation, taking back railways. But mostly on, we're going to take equity in your house to pay for your care, which you've already paid for already. Simple as that. Inexplicably, May published the Tory manifesto which didn't have any figures in it. Think about that. Bizarrely, no numbers. Threatened half the country with stealing their assets in old age. You see where it's all going. And I submit to you, and this is just my opinion, no prime minister in history with approval ratings like May had, with a Brexit mandate like May had, would seven times categorically deny there will be an election and then reverse herself, call the election and commit suicide with the manifesto. And those who hate her, and I don't hate anybody, I have no time for the likes of Theresa May, but I don't hate anybody. But those who hate her said she called it to destroy Corbyn. And I can't see that. I'll tell you why I can't see it. Corbyn was drowning. He was fighting off accusations of anti-Semitism. His own party stabbing him in the back. The madness of Diane Abbott. The madness of Diane Abbott. Surely May would leave, if it was up to May, would leave them destroy themselves. Why call an election which might help the Labour Party? How would it help them, you might ask? Well, if Corbyn was annihilated, you'd be getting rid of him, wouldn't you? And you'd be allowing the party the chance to replace Corbyn with another centrist. Another centrist, another candidate with more chance of taking seats from you, maybe. You know, you're stepping into the unknown. At least with Corbyn, you know what you have. Because I believe without that manifesto, May would have had the majority that the polls were predicting. They were saying before that manifesto, there were stupid predictions. She was going to get 100 majority, 150. That was always crap. The likely majority, somewhere between 30 and 50 or 35 and 60 seats, she would have won without that manifesto. So somebody much higher up the trough than May said, call the election, here's your manifesto. Knowing, I think, that she wouldn't lose in terms of, you know, Labour wouldn't get more seats. I think they knew that, but they knew she would either have a much reduced majority or no majority. Either way, she'd be discredited. If she had a majority of three or four, she'd have been given the same, you know, the same abuse that she's been getting since Friday. And they did this so that it could be claimed that this was a revolt against hard Brexit, which is untenable. To the elite, it's untenable that we walk out of the European Union properly. And it's sickening to me to hear the heavyweight political journals today saying that's the reason. It's all about the hard Brexit. The reason was social care and benefits. It's very simple. And we're living in this new world now, I think, where so long as it is exactly what people want to hear, you can tell them black is white or white is black. As long as they want to hear it. It's laughable for Jeremy Corbyn to be talking about forming a minority government. Laughable. And yet it's being reported as a victory for Labour because it is exactly what the stringmasters want, who will do anything to keep the European Union, to keep the UK, I should say, in the European Union, which is tyrannical, which is Nazi, which is undemocratic. So it suits them. Corbyn talks about staying in the single market for jobs. Forget the fact he's a hypocrite who has railed against the European Union all his life. All his life. I think in the run-up to the referendum last year, and I think since then, we've demonstrated clearly how the European Union has destroyed jobs in this country. Hundreds of thousands in fishery. Tens of thousands in steel. God knows how many in coal. And don't think that Maggie Thatcher, evil bitch though she was, evil incarnate. Don't think Maggie closed the pits by herself. No, she didn't. Came from Brussels. It's cost millions of jobs. But it's central to the agenda for the one world government. Corbyn is even today talking about getting a coalition to defeat the Great Repeal Bill. In fact, he was talking about it yesterday on the Andrew Marr show. Centralisation of power and the European Union is central to the one world government agenda. Why? Because when they achieve it, the depopulation, post-Hunger Games, society, transhumanist agenda can go into overdrive. Mandatory vaccinations for everybody. Mandatory sterilisation. And a whole raft of other things you could blame on climate change. Too many people here can't be having children anymore. Things we used to deride and decried the Chinese for. All of these plans, one world government. So I think what the elite did last week, to finish, was I think they revived the flagging fake left-right paradigm. They gave it an injection, a shot in the arm. I think they eliminated nationalist politics in the space of a few weeks, aided and abetted by the attacks in Manchester and in London. And if you factor into this the madness we are seeing in France now, En Marche, Emmanuel Macron, and the assembly elections, he's going to sweep to power, he's going to have complete domination of the political landscape in France for the next few years. And again, if you tell people what they want to hear, you can tell them that white is black and black is white. Rothschild banker Emmanuel Macron has been sold to people as anti-establishment, as was Donald Trump, as was Jeremy Corbyn. So the public's perception has been changed with regard to the European Union. As we talk now, today, Monday, June 12th, it's all over the television. This was a rejection of hard Brexit. They're going to have some sort of associate membership of the EU all day long. No. This was a rejection of letting them steal your life savings to care for yourself in your old age after you paid into the system all your life. That was the rejection of austerity. Not Brexit, but it doesn't matter. Maybe what I'm saying now, maybe that's been the biggest waste of 35 minutes in my life because they control the narrative. It's exactly 18 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to take some music and then I'm going to be taking your Skypes and your calls. Feel free to dismantle my argument. Feel free to agree with it. You can call 01614082017 if you're inside the UK. My Skype handle couldn't be simpler. It's Chat with Richie. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com. We're on Fab Radio 2 and we're on TuneIn Radio as well. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a very quick break. Back in a minute. Monday, June 12th.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Amy Winehouse, and it's your calls after that. 01614082017 or Skype chat with Richie. Priority given to first time callers, people. I want to hear from new callers. Back in a minute.
Get on without my guide.
Right, I'm going to get rid of Amy Winehouse, much as I love that song, Back in Black, or Back to Black. Back in Black is AC/DC, of course. Back to Black. Jesus, it's a Monday. Back to Black by Amy Winehouse on your Richie Allen Show. Remember, first-time callers given priority. You've got me till the end of the programme. I'm talking about the election exclusively. I had some lovely contacts from people earlier on who wanted to talk about other issues, and I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. Next week we'll do an open phone in, but I want to hear from you on the election today. Our first caller is standing by. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who are you and where are you calling from?
My name is Jonathan Rainey and I'm calling from Dumbarton, just northwest of Glasgow in Scotland.
Hey Jonathan, welcome. Welcome to the programme. Thanks for calling, mate. Go ahead, the floor is yours.
From where I'm from, I admit I'm a young person. I didn't bother voting in the election whatsoever. I mean, I did check from all the political parties, and I do follow your show and David Icke for quite a while. And I do figure out that it's kind of just as bad in Scotland with all the circus fiascos. When you look at the SNP, the Conservatives, and then you've got Lib Dems and Labour and the Greens. And they really, really let me down when it came to voting for Brexit. I was among the few that voted for Brexit last year in the EU referendum. And so every single week in the Dumbarton and Vale Leaving Reporter and the Lennox Herald newspapers, I am sick to death of seeing comment after comment in the letters to the editor sections about how bad Brexit is. I mean, they claim that is supposed to be represented to the unions, the workers' unions, because 62% obviously voted against Brexit. And of course, I did manage to write in a wee article last week in the Lennox Herald about why I don't really want to vote whatsoever. And of course, when I talk about this to other websites like 38 Degrees, for example, that do activism like to stop pesticides. Of course, generally they do side with the EU. But some comments I got in reply when I said I didn't want to vote as a young person because I'd done my research and I checked all the facts was I had one person, and I'm not kidding you, wrote back to me and said, and I quote, get back in your pram. Because, I mean, it's madness, actually, as you've highlighted earlier about what people want to hear. I mean, I wouldn't quite call some people I talk to when they're going for independence in Scotland. I've listened to Tommy Sheridan on your show a while back.
Yeah.
I do talk to some people. They say, and I say to them, well, I'd rather go for independence as long as it doesn't involve going back in the EU. And they kind of go a bit ballistic at me. I wouldn't quite call them social justice warriors because, well, if you're campaigning for something like what David Icke does, to have social equality and get people to love one another and see what the real problem is. I'd rather call them fake social justice defenders. I think that would be more appropriate.
I think you're onto something. Let me ask you this, Jonathan. So you say, look, Scottish independence, but genuine independence. Why would we accede from leave the Union, why would we leave the United Kingdom and then sign over the country to the European Union? That's a valid point and you seem very reasonable. You're obviously very articulate. What is their response? I mean, is it just dismissive or does anybody stop and think, well, you know, he's got a point. Why would we leave, gain independence from one entity and give it straight to another?
Most people are just generally passively dismissive. My hairdresser tends to be kind of the more aggressive one, but not quite too aggressive. There's one saying that probably was inflated by Mary Black, that some people would say, be quiet, please, if I do mention that. You know, I'd want to leave the EU if we go into an independent country. I mean, if I ask someone, like, how you highlight what a politician should say, do you know how the monetary system works? I mean, they kind of treat that question as if it's sort of an insult to them. I mean, that's what really, really gets them riled up. Okay, my mum is kind of one of those people. So I just kind of have to put up with that.
Can I ask you, Jonathan, you said you're a young voter. How old are you? Early 20s?
Yes, I'm 23 years old and I have high-functioning autism as well.
And you're interested in alternative opinions to that which you get when you read your local papers and when you watch BBC and ITV, so you're interested in that stuff.
Yeah, I've been following it for a big while, I mean, probably since the Brexit referendum, and I think around that time, that's when I definitely woke up to what's really going on.
Yeah.
But of course, you still get that reaction of people calling you a bit crazy when you do mention anything.
It doesn't sound like you mind that too much, though. It sounds like you're well able for it.
Yeah, I don't mind seeing what the reaction could be, but it just goes to show what the world is really like if you do try and express what you really think.
Well, it's a shame.
For example,
Sorry, Jonathan, I was going to say, you know, we've touched on this so many times in recent weeks. The echo chambers of social media have turned people into narcissists, and they don't want to hear any other opinion, you know, if it contradicts beliefs that they hold dear. And sadly, many of the beliefs that they hold dear have been given to them, you know, by third parties, or you know, whether it's politicians or whether it's, you know, somebody else. They don't want to hear anything that contradicts that which they hold dear. And that's a terrible thing. It really is. It's devastating. I don't think people understand how big that is.
Well, I don't necessarily blame social media networks whatsoever. They're only just part of the problem. I mean, part of it probably is definitely the local culture. It depends on the culture. I mean, if you know, for example, I mean, Dumbarton has a population of close to 20,000 people. And of course, many politicians, including Jackie Bailey, for example, of Labour, still think that, you know, it's still kind of like a village feel, but it's not quite a village feel if you come in my experience. And of course, when you vote for someone or you want to believe what's happening, I mean, if you know someone and have a close relationship, particularly if they are in politics, you definitely want to try and go along with them. You perhaps don't really want to politely criticise them and say, well, this is not really the right thing to do. I mean, I have talked to Miss Bailey before about Trident. She kind of passively defends going for Trident, even though she... I mean, there's a situation going on with saving the Bellevue Hospital from getting shut down. I mean, she supports the people who decide to save the hospital, but still things are getting worse. I mean, there's still the threat of it being shut down. I mean, how on earth are you expected to save a hospital and get the funds for it if you're still going to be putting all the expenses from central banks towards, you know, weapons of mass destruction?
But Jonathan, this is a key point, you see. I made this point on Friday when I was chatting with David. Jeremy Corbyn might very well be a good man and a decent man. I'm sure he is. I have a lot of time for his brother, who tells me privately he is a very good man. But he's going to fund the NHS and he's going to fund social care and helping people who really need it by borrowing billions from central banks. So boom to bust is inevitable. Regardless of how nice Jeremy Corbyn might be as a person, he is serving the system as much as the hated Gordon Brown and the even more despicable Tony Blair by saying, well, we'll go cap in hand to the Bank of England and we'll borrow £35 billion to do this. It never ends then. And after each bust, austerity gets worse and worse and worse for people until such time as there is nothing. And that's the plan, whether people like it or not. So this is the thing that frustrates me when, you know, I get emails all the time from genuinely hard up people, really bad. And they say, Richie, I can't understand it. Why won't you support him? You know, my circumstances are desperate. And I said, listen, I have experienced genuine poverty. I've lived through that. So I understand it and you have my sympathies. But you're going to get a short-term fake fix, and it's all going to look on the up and up for a little while, and it's going to be even worse next time you have a collapse. Jonathan, I'll give you the final word on this, because lots of people trying to get through. It's gone a bit mad there, the old lines. People are very interested in this. Lovely to hear from you, by the way, in Dumbarton. I'll give you the final word on it, and then I'm going to move on. Go ahead.
So as you mentioned there, people, you know, buy into this whole idea that if a politician says the right things, like, okay, some people would have wanted Rand Paul to win the US election, for example, because he said a lot of the right things about what the US government has really been doing. I mean, I've been following the conflict that's been going on in the Middle East for a while, and I'm quite worried, frankly, about what's going to happen there. But I guess it's the whole point of, well, when people voted for Labour in 1997, for example, it's because people wanted to generally kick out the Conservatives who didn't like all the Raves Party, going about, didn't like all the hatred and all that. I don't know if the culture is going to change and people will finally wake up, because unfortunately you still are going to get laughed at regardless of what you even think. I mean, if you tell a radio producer from, let's say, your Radio FM in the area where I live, for example, what are you going to do? If I say, you know, as I pointed out earlier, I'm not really going to vote for anyone, none of the above, actually. They're going to try and, you know, go all out at me.
Belittle you.
Saying, oh, you're so lazy.
Yeah, belittle you.
I do want to stand up for what I really think. I mean, that's the whole point of all this.
The tragedy, Jonathan, is, and this is in no way to big up this programme, because we're just a programme, but the tragedy is the ideas you're expressing are intelligent and articulate, but those are ideas that cannot be allowed to gestate. They can't be. So when a guy like you gets to a phone-in show, producers love guys like you. I used to produce talk radio. You know, so you phone me, oh, lovely. Guy's really articulate, speaks very well. Go ahead. But they don't want somebody saying, well, listen, this is the reason why things don't change. Hence, I'm not going to vote. You can't be allowed to articulate that, because it might gestate. It might strike a chord with somebody. Jonathan, listen, thanks a million for calling the programme. Thanks for listening to it. And I look forward to you phoning in when we do this again. Cheers, mate. I don't want to give anybody the impression I'm cutting them off, by the way. It's just there's so many calls coming in. A big shout to Jonathan there in Dumbarton. Nice guy. And he's articulated a very good point there. I know a lot of people didn't vote. I didn't vote. Right. Where am I now? Yeah. Alan is in London. And we're going to get Alan from London on. I hope we have Alan from London anyway. You can Skype chat with Richie. You can say it for me. You can call 0161 408 2017. Alan, welcome.
Hello, Richie.
Welcome to the programme. How are you? You're in London.
I'm good. I'm a big fan of yours, but I've been listening to you and Ike for years. But in this instance, I'm sorry to say
you
that
disagree.
I disagree.
Good, good. Programs are boring when we all agree. Alan, you have the floor, my friend. I will not interrupt you. Tell me why.
Right. So, I mean, you were talking about how, for example, Theresa May was started off being extremely popular and then lost all that popularity with the suicidal manifesto. Now, full disclosure, I'm a big Jeremy Corbyn fan. This is the first time I've been passionate about politics. I'm one of those young 30-something-year-olds who just got excited through Corbyn, the kind you hear on the news a lot. But you didn't mention, for example, anything about the media attacking Corbyn, making people hate him so much, right? Theresa May. My opinion is that it's more to do with the hubris that Theresa May just thought she could get away with something so just such a terrible manifesto, that they were just so conceited, so full of hubris, that they thought that they could get away with it because Corbyn was hated so much because the media was on their side, and then in the end it didn't even really backfire, but because, as you say, Labour lost, but it backfired somewhat. So what do you think about that?
As for the media denigration of Corbyn, Jesus, you're absolutely right. And it's something that I mentioned many times over the last 18 months, you know, whether I thought Corbyn had a chance to enact any change or not. You're 100% right, Alan. They ridiculed him, they mocked him, they attempted to take him down. And there's no denying that. I've always said that the problem I have with him, and I said it to his brother, a couple of things, Alan. He reversed himself on the European Union, which is a huge thing for anybody who makes programmes, you know, like this, or for anybody who has the, you know, the opinion that I have about how dangerous the European Union is. I'd love to interview him and have a frank but very, you know, reasonable discussion with him to say, well, why did you reverse yourself on the European Union? That's massive. He's been a staunch opponent of it for many, many years. And I'd like Alan to get stuck into him about the financing of things, because didn't I say to Piers Corbyn, I'm sure you heard that, if you do listen, yeah. I said, Piers, look, if he just would one swoop with a pen eliminated the central banks and said, we'll be responsible for creating our own money, we'll build millions of houses, what a boost to the economy that'll be. We'll get rid of the Zionist lobby out of Westminster. And, you know, I could support that. But, Alan, he's going to borrow billions. And the problem with that is it ends up in financial crashes, which I think get worse and worse and worse, to the point where eventually, I think, you know, life becomes unlivable for people. Back to you. What do you think of that?
Actually, that was a good point you made to the previous caller about the fact that he's just borrowing money to fund the NHS and so on. But then I do wonder, though. I mean, I see your point. I didn't really think about it that way before. But I do wonder if the choices between staying in the European Union under the austerity of the Conservative Party or leaving under Labour and going back to an old school kind of socialist way of raising taxes and spending money, because that becomes an investment.
Yeah.
Right. Like you spend money on university, give people free education, and then that education goes back into society later on, and then the money comes back. Right. That seems to me to be a better option than leaving the European Union with Theresa May's austerity. And if that's how we're not going to be beholden to the central banks. But I would think if we were going to leave the European Union, wouldn't we still be beholden to the central banks?
We would. You're absolutely right. Because, listen, again, I have to agree with you. Nobody has proposed. You didn't hear Boris Johnson, you didn't hear Philip Hammond or Michael Gove saying, we're going to leave the European Union in totality. And by the way, we're going to take control of our currency, our money supply again. No, because I think they might end up at the bottom of a river, or they might go on a Robin Cook-like walk in the countryside and fall off a cliff. I think that's how, you know how serious that is. You're right, Alan, you're 100% right. Look, I think Corbyn is probably fundamentally decent. I think he's probably horrified by the idea that people would be humiliated and embarrassed at benefit hearings. Like, you know that Ken Loach film? I watched that film, I Am Daniel Blake, I think, and I heard from people who sent me messages to say, Richie, that film was so accurate it's untrue, because I've lived through that. I believe that Corbyn would look at that and he would be horrified and he would want to stop that. And that's a good thing. You could never argue with those principles. But I also think that, you know, on some level, a career politician, Alan, like Jeremy Corbyn, probably knows more of the score than he's letting on, because his brother is incredibly clued up on it. I mean, clued up, you know. And I think, well, Jeremy, how often do you get a chance like that in your lifetime to be leader of one of the main political parties and you can actually say things? You know, they can't cut the mic on you. They can't turn the camera away because you're Labour leader. And that's my criticism of him has been consistent for 18 months. You know, say this, say that, and I'll jump, you know, on that bandwagon. I'm going to give you the brilliant points you've raised, Alan. I'm not patronising you. Good stuff. I'll give you the final word on it. Calls are backing up there in the system. A lot of people want to get in on this. Final word to you, my friend, and thanks for calling.
I'm still thinking. I'm still in two minds. You've made very good points, but I've lived through a lot of the unbelievable crap of conservative austerity, and I know this sounds terrible, but I kind of feel like maybe voting in this case for the lesser of two evils, for a guy who's actually legitimately decent, who knows the score but is compromised somewhat, is better than what me and my family have been enduring for the last few years.
And I have no right to argue with that, Alan. None whatsoever, mate. I never have done. I've always said people should do what they want and never let anybody else tell them they're wrong or they shouldn't have done it. Thanks for coming on, mate. Really good points, and I'm sure some of the callers coming on there are going to pick up on them. Thanks, Alan.
Okay, no worries. Thank you.
Look after yourself. That was Alan there on the line to us from London, explaining, very succinctly why he went to the ballot box last Thursday and voted for a Labour candidate. Maybe he voted for Corbyn. I should have asked him, shouldn't I? Was he in Islington? If he's in London. Alan, you might send me a quick message. Where are you in Corbyn's constituency? Right, I'm going to try and get through as many of these as I can. There's loads coming in. Caller, welcome to the programme. Good evening.
Oh, hello there.
Hello, who's this?
It's Andy from Exeter. I spoke to you, a couple of months ago. I think we did the last call in.
You did, Andy. Welcome. Welcome back.
I'm going to make it brief because I know you want to get through a load of callers.
Good to hear from you, my friend in Exeter. Andy, go ahead. What have you got to say?
Thank you. Well, I wanted to talk about Jeremy Corbyn and something David said on Friday, which is about Jeremy Corbyn and the shape-shifting. So, I think this is something I've really picked up on with the guy. I actually really like Jeremy Corbyn. I think, as you've said and other people have said, he does come across as a decent chap, and I think he stands for things. But I think he's a prisoner of his own party. There's one issue in particular that I'm quite passionate about, and that's the nuclear weapon issue, like Trident and the nuclear deterrent. And the guy's a vice chair of the CND. And yet he's not using his platform at all to talk about, the 100 billion we're going to spend on Trident, nuclear weapons, how we should be disarming. Is it because he's, leader of the party and he has to take in, all views, or has he been silenced by them? It makes me sad because I see him as, the chance to have a kind of decent leader for the country, yeah, he's not saying anything. And the same on Europe and the monarchy. And what do you think, Richie? Am I right? Or
I think you're right. This is what I go back to. And you mentioned David. David made a good point as well on Friday when he said he's now gotten rid of the Blairites, hasn't he, Andy?
Yeah.
He's gotten rid of the Blairites. Yeah. They're gone. The backstabbers have to concede that he did better than Miliband. He got 30-odd extra seats, which is a good result. I'm not trying to knock that. The point I was making in the monologue was he didn't win, and it's being spun like he did. He didn't, but he did well, and he did well enough to get rid of the knocker. So now, Andy, is a chance, is an opportunity to say things. It's now or never now to say real things. Like, for example, next time he stands across from May, whose position is untenable, which could be as soon as Wednesday, he might get to stand opposite me. I don't think so. Maybe it'll be the following week. But to say, we should immediately suspend all trading in terms of weapons and arms with the Saudis because they're murdering men, women and children in Yemen. And by the way, Prime Minister, a lot of that weaponry meant for Saudi Arabia is taking a nice little detour with Bugs Bunny taking a left turn at Albuquerque, and it's landing in the hands of ISIS, isn't it, Prime Minister?
Yeah.
We're funding them as well. He's got the platform is clear for him now.
I think he's got the platform, and I think he must have the support now of his party because, like you say, he has gained the 30-odd seats. Exeter is incredibly sort of pro-Labour. The Labour MP is, I think, six terms now in office. 60-odd% of the vote. There's no democracy in Exeter. It's an incredibly safe seat, which is fine because the nearest rivals are Conservatives, and it doesn't really make much difference, does it? But I think you're absolutely right. He actually has to stand up now and take a chance and actually, I think when he was on the backbenches, it was easy for him to be true to his beliefs but he never really got much publicity on the back benches. Now he's got the TV cameras in front of him. He's got the Prime Minister's questions. He's got every opportunity to say what he believes. And if he doesn't, then he's just another fraud, isn't he?
Do you know what, Andy? If he doesn't, I hope that, you know, this amnesia, which seems to run through people like some sort of disease, that people will remember the next time a affable, decent guy who stood up against British Empire tyranny around the world and, you know, stood for peace, that they'll remember that the guy turned out to be pretty much a paper tiger when he got the opportunity, you know? Listen, mate, thanks for coming on. Good to hear from you, Andy.
I appreciate it, Richard. Really good thoughts. Good work. Thanks very much.
Thanks, mate. Bye for now. That was Andy there. Like Alan, you know, I'm particularly interested in people coming on who might have a more positive opinion, not only on Corbyn, but on the process, the electoral process. So if that's you and you want to come on and you want to articulate that, if it was vital for you to vote in the election because your personal circumstances are very bad and you looked at what Corbyn was offering and you thought, you know what, I'm going to go with that, give me a shout and let me know. Richard, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hello there.
Good to hear from you. Turn me down in the background there. I spend all day listening to myself, Richard. So vain am I. And I don't need to. Hey, listen, mate, good to hear from you again. The floor is yours. What do you think? What happened on Thursday last?
It was just a couple of quick points I wanted to make. Looking at... it's maybe sort of betting shop stuff, really. But I think that the Blairites haven't gone away yet. Tony Blair's back on the scene. And somehow, if I was to put money on it, I think chaos is what they want. And eventually, I think someone like David Miliband will come back. Maybe we'll have another election in the next 12 months or so. He'll be the new leader.
He'll be the new...
What do you think?
He'll be the new centrist. And you know, in the monologue, and again, the monologue is not the gospel, it's just my bloody opinion, it could be wrong. But I thought that if it was left up to May wouldn't have called the election because Corbyn was, you know, he was in a bad way. You know, as Alan said, the media were hammering him. His approval ratings were terrible. He was all over the place fighting off accusations of racism and everything else. Because May might have been worried that if we call an election without the dodgy social care manifesto, we might win in a landslide, which might see the end of Corbyn. And then some centrist, some Emmanuel Macron type might join the Labour Party and revive them, a la David Miliband. I think it's a good point, Richard. But I think now... I'll slightly disagree with you. I think, you remember Peter Mandelson a few weeks ago saying that I get up every day thinking of ways to undermine Corbyn. And Mandelson said this, Blair was saying this, but I think because he had a decent-ish result, and I think because he was strong and he was determined and his message was consistent during the campaign, and because he put 30 new seats on, I think these guys... I agree with you, Richard. It mightn't be gone away, but I think they are for a while, I think. That's just me.
I think it... Yeah. I think it will be critical, as the previous caller said, for Corbyn to make a strong fist of it over the next 3 months.
Are you optimistic he will, Richard? What do you think? I mean, are you holding out some hope that he will unshackle himself now because the fighting... in the party is gone. None of these people can attempt to undermine him now, at least not for a year or 18 months. He's earned that right to be the Labour leader. And anybody who tries to come after him now is going to come to no good. So are you optimistic he might take that opportunity now and bang, go straight after it, start saying things, doing things? What do you think?
I think I'm very much of your mindset that... it's going to be very unlikely that we're going to get a messiah, a political solution to all of our problems. However, Corbyn, as you say, he's a man of principle, and I think now's the time he's got to grasp the nettle. If he doesn't, maybe they've got to him. I hope not.
Brilliant to hear from you, Richard. That's a good point, mate. Good stuff. Thanks for that. And cheers for listening to the programme. Great stuff. That was Richard there. Thanks for that, Richard. Calls are backing up, and I'm trying to message people to say, hang on for a minute, give me a minute, and I'll get you on one way or the other. So if you've been on the programme, I'm not going to bring you on a second time. So if you've already called and you've been on, I'm not going to call you a second time. Okay? So this is weird, this, isn't it? What's going on there? Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I'm phoning people up now. I'm getting back to people that I said I'd get back to in a minute. Caller, you are welcome to the programme. Good evening. Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking to John from Belfast, Richie.
Hey, John. Welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. It's good to speak to you. I've been listening to you for the last few years, on and off, you know.
Thanks, John. Thanks for that. I hope you don't always agree with what you hear. I'm looking for an argument tonight.
No, well, I don't agree with everything you say, but, you know, I agree with a lot of what you say, but mainly what I'm ringing up for is I want to talk about this DUP thing. You probably guessed from the accent.
Yes, mate, this is important. I was hoping we get into this. The Democratic Unionist Party, Arlene Foster, who are they? What do they stand for? And what does it mean for government? The floor is yours, John. Go ahead.
Well, what I want to talk about in particular is the media reaction. All this tonight, I think it's disgusting, to be honest, because, you know, it seems to me the only thing being attacked here is the Christianity. Now, I know you're not a big fan of Christianity or religion from listening to you for years, but you see, it seems to me that the guy was wanting to ask you the question that, you know, I know you don't believe in it, but if it wasn't true, you see, yeah, I know you don't believe in the Christian belief and stuff, but if it's not true, why do these people attack it so much? Because it seems that the DUP in particular, people like me over here, now I'm not a practicing Christian by any means, I want to make that clear, but it seems to be that people like me and people over here who would be classed as sort of traditionalists, or according to the media and social media in England, we were, you know, dinosaurs and backward people and stuff. It seems that, you know, the DUP and that labelled it, because of their stance on abortion and their stance on, you know, anti-gay marriage, that, you know, there's an all-out attack. And to me, you know, that's why I'm asking, I wanted to ask you in particular, Richie, you know, if the Jesus thing isn't true, right, say it's not true, like you think it's not true, you think it's, like David Icke, it's all part of the, you know, this construct, whether it's Islam, Judaism, whatever religion, all the Abrahamic faiths, you know, you would go that lane that they're all part of the, you know, part of the agenda. But I'm asking you if, you know, if it's not, there's a, you know, I'm an open person. I'm open to, you know, I'd like to think I'm well read. So if it's not true, why do these people, the powers that be, attack the Christian, traditional Christian belief and tradition so much? Because over here, as you know, over here in Northern Ireland, gay marriage is still illegal. Abortion is still illegal. And, you know, people over here, they're not as easy brainwashed as what I see people in England, France and Germany, all the big nations would be. You know, you could say that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's a fact, you know, people just don't go along with what they see on TV. You know, well, you could turn that around, I suppose, and say, well, you're going along with what you've been told for years in church or whatever, but, you know, there's an all out, you can't deny, Richie, that there is an agenda to totally discredit and destroy the European Christian way of life. And that, you know, there's nobody can deny that. To me, the media, the people of the media really, you know, crush and try to lambast the most are the people which you would call native peoples in Europe, you know, people in Ireland, people in England, Germany, France. You know, if you speak out about what's going on, about this agenda, you know, about your country being flooded with people from our countries and our religions, and, you know, as a common sense person, you're going to say, this is going to end in tears. My experience, you know, Richie, from living in Belfast, when you have two, and that's just two sides of a Christian coin, when you bring in different people from, you know, especially Islam and stuff, if you bring them into this country here, it's going to end in tears. It's been proven all over the world. But when people come out and say that, then you get labelled the big bad racist, or even worse, you're a Nazi. And you know, but I can't understand. Could you explain to me why?
Do you know, I have an opinion,
the Christian
John.
The thing is so offensive. I'd like to ask you why. If you think personally, I know you heard you saying one time you were that soldier, i.e. Catholic. So
yeah,
if you think it's all part, like David Icke says, part of this, you know, part of this Archon thing or whatever, then why do they attack the Jesus message so much?
Do you know, I don't have a definite answer for that. And I always, whenever I've spoken about religion, I always say, this is the opinion I've come to based on the things I've seen. But I've always tried to be sensitive, never mocking, never condemning, because some of the people closest to me in the world are devout Christians. They've got very strong beliefs, and I don't know everything. Do you know what I think is going on, John? I think we're drowning in a sea of identity politics and political correctness. And I think the establishment has definitely targeted people with beliefs, you know, people with beliefs that, I don't want to say that are marginal, because I don't think they are marginal. I think a lot of people have got strong opinions on abortion. I think a lot of people have got very strong opinions on gay marriage. My opinion on gay marriage is, and always has been, you know, two consenting adults can do whatever they want, so long as it isn't impacting on me or anybody else. But I've always been honest enough to say, and I've only got one gay friend, to be honest, one real gay friend. And funnily enough, he agrees with me, but his friends don't agree. I don't believe in same-sex adoption. I don't believe in it. I have no time for it. I don't like it. I don't like the idea of two men adopting a child or two women. And I'm not suggesting that any harm, any physical harm or anything like that would come to the kid. I just don't think it's a good thing. It's not right, in my opinion. But I'm not going to get into it. Do you know what's happening, John? Gilad Atzmon's new book is outstanding on this. The establishment, the state, let's call them the state, has a set of directives on every single issue. And you must go along with that. Your opinion on these issues must be the opinion that has been given to you or has been drawn up as that which is correct. And there is no room and no tolerance for other opinions. And the person who says they're absolutely against abortion is labelled something, is ostracised in some cases, is demonised, is criticised, and in some cases is humiliated because they have an opinion that differs from what the mainstream opinion is. That's what's going on here. And I think people who have strong religious beliefs, they're noticing that more than most other people, because those are people that have traditional beliefs, you know, about family and about the structure of family and about marriage. And I agree with you. I don't like people being labelled as bigots or as, you know, some sort of lower intelligence life form just because they don't believe in gay marriage. Now, so long as they're not out in the street shouting at people who are gay, you know, which I would never agree with, whatever the issue is. But by all means, you know, you shouldn't be hiding your opinions. I mean, Jesus, are we ever going to get anywhere in terms of understanding who we are or where we came from if you don't talk to one another? You know, I have a grandfather whom I love dearly. He's in his mid-80s. And I tell you what, John, and I'd be interested to get your opinion on this. I don't mind saying this, but I used to joke with him years ago when I used to take the ferry to Holyhead to get the train to Manchester to watch United. I used to joke with him saying, I'm going to bring back a black girl, Grandad. I love black girls. I'd love to be with a black girl, you know. And they'd be like, you won't be coming in here. Right? And he was serious, right? And I used to talk about this on the radio years ago. People say, your grandfather's just a racist. He's an intolerant racist. I'm like, is he really? Why? Because he's never experienced, you know, living with or amongst other ethnic groups or cultures. And because, you know, he's quite happy the way he is and he'd prefer his little world to be the way it is. So he's some sort of intolerant, bigot, racist just because he says, I won't let you back in here if you come back with any black girl. You know, so...
Well, you see...
Yeah, go ahead. This is good. I like this.
Well, you see, you know, you would know from coming from Ireland and me as well that over here we didn't have mass immigration, even especially in Northern Ireland. We didn't have any immigration until the last maybe 10, 15 years. And where I live would basically be still working class, you know, Northern Irish people. So and only that, you know, so very, very few even in this area. So people are not, you know, they're not getting the life of people in Manchester or England had or whatever the last 20, 30 years. It's all new to them. And, you know, change. Something I can understand you saying about your grandfather, because especially our generation, people in those days, and like my grandfather as well, their generation, you know, things were traditional. You had your way of life, and there's a culture here. And, you know, there is a culture in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, which is ancient. You know, it's an ancient culture, and it's been going on. And I don't, you know, are you wrong to say you wish that to remain the way it always was? You know, people would have, years ago, people were able to leave their doors open here, you know, in rough areas. Do you know what I mean? They were able to leave their doors open. Nobody would come into your house to steal.
No, they
you know,
wouldn't
there's
know.
That community.
John, can I ask you this question? I'm dying to ask you a question, John. Do you agree with me, or am I wrong? When we saw in the 50s in this country, when people were coming from sub-Saharan Africa, when they were coming from the sub-equator, Asian men and women coming to this country, do you think, as I do, that as far back as then, there were plans to prevent any genuine integration, John? And I don't mean by the people coming. I don't mean by the Indians or the Bangladeshis or the Sri Lankans, or I don't mean by them, but the apparatus of the state, or the hidden hand that we talk about. Do you think these people were saying, we will dilute culture, we will, you know, get rid of nationalism and national identity, we'll get rid of sovereignty, and we'll do that by preventing any genuine integration? What do you think? Am I? Because a lot of people disagree with me on this. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's all part of the plan. I think, as you say, I agree with you, it's part of the plan. I think that they knew when they were bringing in, you know, copious numbers of people, thousands and thousands of people, and they continued it. And if you look at all this migrant crisis, and I know you've covered that in depth, when you look at that and what's going on, you can see that this is all deliberate. It's all designed to replace the populations that were here. And I think ultimately what it is that to ensure that these people are ruled forever, basically, because, you know, in a country like this, or countries like, say, Germany or Sweden, Denmark, Norway, anywhere in Europe where there's ancient lands, isolated lands with no, you know, a strong national, you know, identity.
Yeah, I'm on phone.
If you're going to dilute that, you know, you get two factions, and then the people who's really at the top stay at the top, you know. So you point the finger at the newcomer coming in, and, you know, you take your eye off the ball with who's really bringing them in. You with me, Richie?
I am. And John, there is another caller on the line there. I took him in and I kind of momentarily forgot. Caller, welcome.
Hi, Richie, it's Dave.
Dave, welcome.
David
Stewart Cole, welcome to the programme.
Yeah.
Say hello to John there, my friend.
Hiya, John, you all right?
Yes, hello, Dave.
David, go ahead. Right. Go ahead, mate. You have the floor. Go ahead there. Sorry I kept you waiting, by the way. Go ahead.
No problem, Richard. Actually, I was ringing about something entirely different, if I may, about medicine.
Well, we're getting a massive amount of calls on the election, David. I want to stay with that. Do you know what I'll do, David?
No problem, mate. I will Google it. Can I just ask you then one question?
Go ahead.
And my question, and I've asked, you know, I'll ask the same of you and of David Icke and our friend Mr. Hewitt. Do you think that people can come straight to the, you know, straight to where you're at, straight to where David's at, or do they have to go through a kind of Corbyn route and get fed up of the? Do they have to go through that route first?
That's a really good question. Because, geez, that's a good question, that. For me, there was a bit of that. I was very fond of the Workers' Party in Waterford City and the work they were doing there. And then a man I went to school with called David Cullinan. David is a TD now. He's an Irish Member of Parliament. And I was very fond of David. Now, David is a Sinn Féin TD. Now, I had no time. I never had any interest in the IRA or violence or anything like that. But in the late 90s, early 2000s, David began doing a lot of decent work around the community. So I would have always voted on the left. And then I began to see through, you know, the ineffectiveness of that and the limitations of that. It's a good question. Put it over to John there in Belfast. John, what do you think? Do you need to go down the road of being disappointed by Jeremy and others before you come out the other end realising it's futile? What do you think, John?
I think it's all fixed, to be honest. The lad, I don't care who it is, stands up for election. I would agree with you, Richie, that it's all a complete farce. The end, it's been proven with Trump, and it's been proven in every country where there's a so-called Messiah that comes along, that ultimately they're in the same people's pockets. And until there's some sort of mass sort of unrest or something, or a revolution, it's never going to change. It's the same people in power. It's the same agenda in every country that's just rolled out with different actors and different figures. You know, it's just, yeah, anybody can see the world's upside down. You know, anybody who's got a brain can see that none of these people have any integrity whatsoever. And I don't believe that the likes of Corbyn or any of them are genuine. I just, if you get to that, for me, I would say if you get to that position, then you've already been bought and paid for.
Put that to David, John. John, sorry about that. Put that over to David. David, what do you think? John says if you ascend to that position, if you arrive there as party leader, you've already been compromised one way or the other. What do you think, David?
Well, I've got three letters for you on that. CSA, child sexual abuse. Do we think that wasn't going on in Islington? And Islington wasn't the centre of it, and that is Mr. Corbyn's constituency.
It's his backyard, yeah, but there's never been any... I don't think there's ever been any. Now, I could be wrong, and I'm not just being the devil's advocate, but it went on and is going on everywhere. I don't think he should be tainted for that and that alone, you know. David, I'll give you...
Well, what I would,
go ahead, and then I'm going
to
move on.
What I would say to that, Ricky, is this. In Doncaster, the MPs in Doncaster won a court case against a lady in UKIP. I'm not a UKIPper. Very, very far from it, more of a Corbynite. But it's the one time that I did agree with anything that UKIP said. And what she said and what they took her to court for was she said they were the MPs, they were there, they must have known. Now, that is my experience, that when it's going on, they are told. And I know that because I know my old MP knew about what was going on in my area. I know that she did because I was one of the people that told them. These MPs know, they all know what's going on.
I know. Listen, I would agree, but knowing and being able to do anything about it, I mean, ultimately it's up to the police, isn't it, to deal with this stuff. David and John, thanks to both of you, by the way. David, we're going to do a phone in on
one
this.
Thing, Richie?
Go ahead, mate, quick, and then we're going to move on. Go ahead, John.
Yes, just because I really enjoy your programmes to do with, you know, the alternative speakers with regards to the human origins and stuff. I just wanted to ask you one quick question about, you know, this belief here, the Archon thing and all, that they control all, and even in the afterlife that we always hear. I just wanted to ask you, how does anybody really know? How does anybody know what happens next? That was what I wanted to know.
And I have no answer to that. You know, I used to...
It's a good question, mate, isn't it?
It's
a brilliant
question.
How does anybody really know?
I'll tell you what I'll say, and then I'm gonna part company with you and David and take another call. I'll tell you what I will say on that. When I first began speaking with David on radio, I used to be dismissive of that research to the point that I wouldn't allow David talk about it, and I would limit our conversations exclusively about geopolitical affairs and wars. But the more I've done my own reading into it, not just reading David's material but other material, I do think we're living in a simulation, and I think some entity or other has created that. But listen, that's a show for another day. Thanks to both of you for coming on. Really enjoyed speaking with
yes,
you, David.
Cheers, mate. Cheers.
And John, thank you,
cheers,
guys.
Mate.
Bye for now. Lovely stuff. I hear loud and clear what David said there about MPs and MPs hearing things and knowing things about abuse. I hear it loud and clear. But hearing rumours and being told things and knowing for a fact that things are happening are two different things. I wouldn't beat up any MP because sexual abuse was rife in that person's constituency. I just wouldn't be so judgmental about it. You know, I've had it on the programme before. Oh, it was happening in Islington. Yes, but it's no... You know, that doesn't mean that Jeremy Corbyn, A, knew about it, and B, even if he did, could do anything about it. I'm going to take a very quick break. This is the Richie Allen Show. Phone in on the election result. Broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and, of course, richieallen.co.uk. We'll be back in a minute with more.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
You're not going to believe what's just happened to me. I believe in complete transparency when you do a radio programme. I've had a horrendous bout of diarrhoea. I can't believe I've just said that and admitted it. I've had to run for the bathroom there, hence the music. I was going to come back and start taking calls. But whatever I ate at dinner, whatever I ate has gone right through me. Mother of Jesus. That wasn't good at all. But I think I'm a bit better now. And I chose the wrong song as well. 3.5 minutes. I should have played MacArthur Park by Richard Harris, which is 2.5 hours long. Or American Pie by Don McLean, which is 3 hours, 36 minutes and 22 seconds long. Holy sh... Anyway, yeah. Thank God the studio is not too far from a bathroom. Unbelievable, eh? I believe in total and utter transparency on the radio. What did I eat? I can't think of... Yeah, I have an idea. Caller, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Very good, Richie. How are you?
I'm very well. Who am I speaking with?
Jonathan Colby Brown.
Jonathan, welcome to the programme and thank you for supporting us. Nice to have you on.
You're most welcome.
Listen, mate, the floor is yours, the election. What happened? What do you think happened? What do you think will happen? Go ahead.
Well, you know, I could talk about the things I liked that happened at the election, but I think that would be avoiding the core issue, which is, of course, I have come over to my opinion has changed to match yours, largely because of the research I've done since I started thinking about it. And, yeah, I don't think it matters who's in there. I do prefer Corbyn by far to May. I think that the Conservatives and the Tories are literally working on the behalf of, you know, major arms dealers and things like that. And I don't particularly like the conflict of interest I see with Theresa May's husband being a G4S executive and involved in all these offshore tax avoidance schemes. So I'm glad that the Corbyn made the advances that he did. But I still wanted to talk to you about the fact that in America in particular and in the UK as well, how do we know who counts the votes? How do we get a record of that? Are they on paper? Do they keep them? I mean, my ideal system would be that everyone gets a duplicate receipt for their vote. So you actually have a piece of paper you take away with you with your vote on it. So if there's a recount, the people can actually do a recount independently of the vote-counting people. I've seen posts on Facebook saying that Theresa May's buddy is a Tory that owns the system that counts the votes. I don't know if that's true or not, though. I haven't researched it. So that's my question to you, is how do we know that any of this is real?
We don't, do we, Jonathan?
We really don't.
We have... The system of voting here is as it was since Moses was a boy. And it is the best way of doing it. You're right. It should always be paper ballots. I like your idea about a receipt. Although they would argue that, you know, the whole thing is supposed to be the... anonymity is central to what we do and privacy and all of that. But I hear what you're saying loud and clear. It is possible. Jonathan, just before you come back in, of course it's possible for ballot boxes to be stuffed. Absolutely, 100%. It must be pretty easy to do that.
Well, you'd think by now. I mean, I've seen so many memes and heard so many, you know, people quoting famous elders talking about if voting really mattered, they wouldn't let us do it. So, you know, if the system can own and control every single corporation, owns and controls, the bankers own and control. You know, I just finished Dean Henderson's marvelous book, Big Oil and Their Bankers. And it just brought me around again to the fact that if they can control all that, why can't they control the voting? And I think I will assert that they do control the voting, and that the fact that Corbyn made advances at all, somebody at the very highest levels must have thought, must have said, look, you know, there's one of two purposes. One is we can't fool the people all of the time. We have to let them have their way some of the time and make some advances for labor. Otherwise, you know, plus you've talked at length about how Theresa May's campaign was a disaster and her manifesto was a disaster. And it is. And it was. And she said some crazy whacked out things coming up to the election. But really, if we look at the strategy behind it, and if we look at it from a kind of a David Icke style point of view, what's the purpose of destabilizing the British government at this point? Well, it's Brexit.
It's 100% about Brexit. At least that's what I've deduced anyway, Jonathan. I don't like to be ramming it down people's throats as if I know everything. I don't. But
look at...
It's being spun.
They're already talking about a soft Brexit now.
Soft Brexit,
rather than a hard.
It's being spun today that the election result was a siren call from the UK people against a hard Brexit. There's no talk of the fact that it might have been a reaction against the catastrophic social care policy in the manifesto, the promises, the threats. I mean, they were threatening people, Jonathan. They were threatening people, middle-income people, middle-aged people. Listen, when you get older, we're going to take equity out of your house. Nobody is saying that this might have had anything to do with the, some Tory voters turning away. It's all about it was an affront to and it was a reaction against the hard Brexit, which is untenable. Wasn't about that, not in my opinion anyway. The manifesto was suicidal. Nobody in their right mind would have written that manifesto.
Nobody. Well, yeah, and the point about the election being a fraud, which, in my heart of hearts, I believe it is fraudulent every time, but especially the last few Tory elections, which have been contested. There's police districts all over the UK investigating voter fraud, election fraud, not voter fraud, on the part of the Tories, and yet these investigations go nowhere fast enough. And there's no convictions. And yet, if you look at the strategy behind it, now we have the Tories having to ally with a far right minority, and that would hold them ransom, every time they want to vote on something. Apparently, but that didn't work too well for the Lib Dems, who were destroyed by their breaking the promise on the school tuition fees.
Yeah.
So you've got this crazy situation where now the EU has, in effect, more leverage, more power. The British government is unstable and cannot pass a Brexit. It throws the government into chaos, and I think that was exactly the intention of the election. I think if you look at the numbers of young voters, 18 to 24s that came out and voted, something like 72% for Corbyn.
For that demographic, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you look at that and you say, well, wait a minute, are there not enough? If that's an indicator of the election, Corbyn should have won by a landslide. Labour should have taken the thing completely. And what we see is this just weakening of the Tories but leaving them in office. So I think the whole thing is designed, and it's going to mess up Brexit to the point where, Great Britain will exit the EU and still be bound by the agreements of the Brexit negotiations on everything that the EU wants.
This associate membership, Jonathan. This associate membership nonsense. You're half in, half out.
Whatever. Yeah, exactly. It'll be basically that, because let's face it, the hypocrisy of the immigration stance of the UK government, especially the Tories, is mind-blowing, considering that every corporation here in the UK absolutely loves immigrants from other countries that don't speak English as a first language because they don't form unions, they don't complain about workplace practices, and they get deported if they raise a big fuss, or they could be.
Jonathan, that's a brilliant comment, mate. Really, really good stuff. We're 12 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. I've got another caller coming in. I'm going to squeeze two or three more in before we go. Thanks for coming on. Last time we heard from you was last year, and thanks for supporting the programme, Jonathan.
You're really welcome, Richie. My pleasure, and I hope to talk to you again someday.
Can't wait. Cheers, Jonathan. Lovely Jonathan there with some brilliant comments about the real reasons behind the calling of the election, the way it went, the manifestos. Going to take another call very quickly. Caller, you're very welcome to the programme. Good evening. Caller, you're live. Go ahead.
Hello, Richie. Is that you?
It is indeed. Who am I speaking to?
It's Mark calling from Gloucestershire.
Mark from Gloucestershire, welcome to the show. Nice to be with you, mate. Go ahead. The floor is yours. You've got a couple of minutes.
All right. First of all, if I have to say to you, I used to work for the holiday industry, and if you're not well, you need flat, warm Coke. That'll sort your stomach out.
Flat, warm Coke. Do you know what? I'm feeling a bit better, Mark, but a few minutes ago. I'm like Rodney Dangerfield. I'm all right now, but last week, I got to tell you, I wasn't great a few minutes ago, but I'm all right now. Go ahead, mate, and thanks for the tip. Go ahead.
All right. Well, my point is very quick, very simple, and it's about the danger of watching out about labels. We're at a point of time where I think there's lots of labels flying around, and I think that we're experiencing what you call in psychology a classic pattern interrupt, like you do it in hypnosis. You interrupt a pattern, you go, ooh, and in that moment where you're slightly stunned, the person can put in anything they want. They can say anything and you'll sort of believe it, you'll follow it. And you'll particularly follow it when it comes to labels. And I was thinking about it today and thinking the labels that are flying around, there's like Brexiteer, there's Ramona, obviously conspiracy theorists. And you can go on and on and on. And it sort of puts people in little boxes and it helps to funnel ideas into certain places and certain directions. And so my only point was this, is like, let's all be aware we might be in the middle of a massive pattern interrupt. Let's not jump into any particular label and make any life-changing decisions, because it feels like there's an intent behind it.
Do you know what, Mark? I think you've just hit the nail on the head, and I think you're right to talk about labels, because labels lead us down another path, and that is the manipulation of our language.
Yeah.
You know, terms like Brexit, terms like Brexiteer, they are in some way to, not to demean or to diminish, but to kind of take away the importance of these discussions. And they're to take away any intellectual attempts to understand these issues, aren't they? They're to minimalise these things in some way. Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I do, Richie, because they're also, what they're about is they're about creating tribalism, but not natural tribalism, a manufactured plastic tribalism where you can group people, and that basically starts segregating ideas such as nationality from race and integrating those two ideas and making it confusing. So somebody who might be born in any particular place, very much like responding to that particular nationality and living a certain way, might suddenly have their be challenged because they're of a different race or a mixed race or so on. And actually that's so reductive, because nationality should be absolutely inclusive. The nationality is a great thing, but yes, we all come in different shades and shapes and all the rest of it, as long as we want to be with each other and have a shared set of values, and we have this idea of togetherness. But these labels will separate that and start funneling people into places they probably wouldn't naturally want to be into.
I can't say anything to add to that, because it's absolutely, I think you're just bang on the money, Mark.
Well, I'm a big fan of the show. I've listened to stuff David say, and I, you know, I follow that, and I listen to all the arguments there, and I agree with kind of almost everybody. But I think that what we could do to best serve ourselves is just take a deep breath and look around and not jump into any particular label. Just let's let the dust settle, and let's let our own natural and innovative and that instinctive knowledge that we all have.
You're 100% right. Again. And you know, if and when, because I know Gilad listens to the show on demand, and he'll love hearing that, because, you know, he's trying to raise, you know, a conversation about identity politics, seeing the world as Mark as a gay man, or Richie as a transgender, or whatever, you know, identifying ourselves with a group, a label, and not looking at things on their merits and dealing with things on the merits of, you know, whether they make sense or whether they don't, coming at things completely openly. It's important stuff, Mark, you know.
I suppose the bottom line is don't plant a flag until you've taken a few deep breaths and decided what flag do you really want to plant. I think things are too up in the air. And I think that my point about the pattern interrupt is we are so ripe for manipulation right now, Richie, because we're all like, oh, I need something to cling on to. Give me something clear and simple and I'll cling on to it. And that's the funneling I was talking about. We've got to be really careful about that. We're ripe for that at the moment. We've just got to hold our ground, take a deep breath and be a little bit brave and think, no, I'm going to ride this out and see where I plant my flag.
Brilliant to hear from you, Mark. Thanks for calling in, mate.
No, pleasure. Keep up the good work, Richie.
Cheers. Thanks for that. Brilliant stuff. We've had some quite amazing calls tonight from people with opinions formed by themselves. A friend of mine in Dublin, my great friend Jean Anne Crowley, just acknowledged the level of understanding and the articulate nature of the call. It's quite amazing, really. That sounds incredibly patronising. It's not meant to. It is incredible. Plenty of time. I said it before and I'll say it again. The Richie Allen Show, in association with DavidIke.com, is built on time and pressure. Loads of time and Absolutely no pressure. Back in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Right, welcome back. We've got one more caller. We've got 90 seconds. Caller, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hello.
And finally, we have a lady caller. Who am I speaking with?
Oh, I can't believe I've got through. It's Mandy.
Mandy, welcome to the programme, Mandy. Sadly, I can only give you 2 minutes. You've got 2 minutes. Fire away.
Oh, was that really quickly? Just my sort of theory on why... the powers of be are trying to separate us, picking up on the previous caller's theory about why they won't allow us to integrate. And I think it's because they don't want us to coexist. It's like if we have coexistence, if we understand each other, if we learn about each other, it's empowering, and it's as if they don't want us to be able to learn how to coexist. In so that we understand differences, because that means we would all have personal freedom and we'd respect other people's personal freedom, and that would be empowering, and that would mean that they would lose control of us totally. Because I think I'm trying to explain what I'm trying to say, but
it's really good, Mandy. I get it. As long as we're dividing one another on differences of religion, of ethnicity, as long as we can't stand one another, we're not dealing with them, are we? We're not taking them on.
Yeah, but I think it's freeing. It's empowering. If you've ever been like when I was at university, and being with lots of people of different diversity and getting on. It's very empowering. It's very freeing, and you have personal freedom. You respect other people's personal freedom, and then people can't control you. The powers that be can't control that. If we learn that skill of coexistence, we've kind of cracked it in a way, and that's what they don't want. And that's just a theory that I've been thinking about. They don't want us to know how to coexist and love one another despite our differences.
They certainly take, they go to great lengths to make sure that doesn't happen, right?
Yeah, it's very important to like the previous guy was saying about labels. I think I'm very much kind of a spiritual person. I listen to your program every night, and I'm always kind of wanting to ring up and talk about spiritual things, really, but I mean, you've got lots of other subjects to talk about. But I think it's really important, whatever we're dealing with, to kind of rise above it and say, you know what? We just need to love each other and respect our differences no matter what is happening, and don't fall for the division and the hatred. And I think that's the way forward.
It's really important. We are going to be doing more spiritual and more esoteric subjects. Whenever I say this, my listeners always come back to me and say, you're a liar, Richie. You always say this. And then you don't do as much as you say, but we are this week, next week, and through the summer. I've taken steps to make sure that we start to look at the nature of reality, ourselves, spirituality, because it's hugely important. It goes alongside this information. You've got 30 seconds to make a final point, Mandy, and then I'm out of the program. Go ahead.
Just whatever happens, please, people, just focus on what we really want for the future. What kind of world we want to be, and what do you want for your children? And just let's focus on that and manifesting that.
Really enjoyed hearing you, Mandy. I wish we had more time. I'm sorry about that. Sincerely.
That's fine. I can't believe I got through. Thanks a lot, and I love you to bits.
Thanks a lot. Love you too. Thanks, Mandy. Bye for now. Thanks. The lovely Mandy on the line to us there. Didn't even ask Mandy where she's from. I'm going to save Mandy's number. Next time we do a phone-in, I'm going to get her on. Next time we're on, Daniel Ford and Faisal will be forced up as God is my judge, if there is a God. I'm going to do another phone-in next week. Daniel and Faisal, I'm sorry. You've been on the programme many times before, both of you, and I wanted to prioritise new calls. I'm sure you'll forgive me. Thank you to everybody who did call in, by the way. That was extraordinary. I really enjoyed that, more than any show I've enjoyed for a while. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to you for listening. That's it for the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com. Back tomorrow at 8 p.m. 7 p.m. even. 7. This is David Bowie. Bye.